By now, I trust you've heard of the best-selling book, Eat, Pray, Love, by Elizabeth Gilbert. It's the story of one woman's search for her real self. Now, Elizabeth has had a hard time. She's just been through a contentious divorce. She's too busy in her professional life as a travel writer. She's depressed after an opera divorce affair goes sour. She's a real mess, and she needs to find her way again. Any path would do, she thought, as long as it led to healing and finding the way to herself. Most of us don't get to go off on a big spiritual quest like she does without some kind of major motivation. Maybe it's a crisis, but it could be as simple as a sabbatical. It matters that you listen to your heart to hear what it is that you really need. Elizabeth has not done that very well, but finally she realizes that she has been trying too hard for too long to please too many other people. So she asks herself, what is it that she wants? At first, she hears her inner voice saying not so surprising things. I want to go to a yoga class. I want to leave this party early so I can go home and read my novel. I want to buy myself a new pencil box. But she also kept hearing herself say, I want to learn to speak Italian. In her case, this was not something really new, but it was urgent suddenly, although not particularly practical. She says, but why must everything be practical? I've been such a diligent soldier for years, working, producing, never missing a deadline, taking my credit record, voting. Is this lifetime supposed to be only about duty? I think the author was yearning for beauty. Beauty is a sensory, soul-satisfying appreciation of your surroundings. Beauty is healing, restorative. Walking with beauty was her prayer, the beginning of her healing. Immersing herself in beauty was the author's first step in restoring her soul. UU minister Midge Squire reminds us, as Unitarian Universalists, we have restoration in our Universalist bloodline. Minister Winchester's 1788 work, Dialogues on the Universal Restoration, is based on a passage from the Book of Acts, which promises a time of, quote, restitution of all things. This cornerstone belief in universal salvation convinced early Universalists that all people would be eventually restored to God. Restoration was God's plan of returning the world to its true creation, to wholeness, serving as a promise that no matter how sinful, difficult, or broken their own lives were, they would indeed participate in, quote, the final holiness and happiness of everybody. Restoration is return. It is promise and hope. But it is also loss and change. It is something new, made out of the old, resembling it, but with its own history. So Elizabeth goes on a spiritual quest, a kind of pilgrimage of her own fashioning. Going on a pilgrimage as a spiritual quest is far from unique. Sometimes pilgrims visit a particular place, a holy place like Mecca, or as a memorial like the millions who traveled to Rome in 2005 to view the body of Pope John Paul II lie in state. Some of us head to the library to walk our way through the religious texts, or maybe it's the sci-fi section. Pilgrimages can take us to a particular place, or maybe the journey is more the emphasis. One expert calls pilgrimages a longing for the divine. I'd say a pilgrimage is a search for wholeness, for mental health, emotional health, spiritual health, as in, how is it with your spirit today? Elizabeth Gilbert starts her pilgrimage by traveling to Italy to further her Italian. She realizes that spontaneous classes happen every time she speaks to someone, for they all speak Italian with a Roman accent. Eventually, she finds a young man who makes conversations with visitors as a living, and they meet most days for conversations in both English and Italian. She's looking for beauty, some goodness in life. In the process, she discovers wonderful Italian food. That's the eat part, of course. She realizes that not only does she like Italian, she loves Italian food. She tells the story of going to a tiny market very near where she's staying, and in Italian, of course, buying some thin, bright asparagus. She walks the 3 blocks back to her apartment and soft-boils a pair of fresh brown eggs for her lunch. After peeling them, she arranges them on a plate beside the 7 stalks of asparagus. She adds some olives and some goat cheese. Dessert was a lovely peach. She says, for the longest time, I couldn't even touch this food because it was such a masterpiece of lunch, a true expression of the art of making something out of nothing. She sat and gazed at its beauty until she was full, and then she ate the lunch. She is nourishing herself for her further work. You've heard of comfort food. Our spirits, too, need comforting. Elizabeth found beauty. She writes that it is your duty to find something beautiful in your life, no matter how slight. Continuing with her quest to find herself, Elizabeth next travels to India, arriving at the ashram of the spiritual guru she discovered through that failed affair. Here she learns some spiritual disciplines, painfully. Menial work, meditation, yoga, chanting. However, she finds this very difficult. She is plagued by monkey mind, a mind that will not still. At least what she thinks it should be by the word still. One day, in the midst of a guided meditation, she fell asleep or into a trance or something, and during the dream, a yogi told her that trying to still the mind is like trying to stop ocean waves. Maybe she's trying to stop the unstoppable. Liz, as her friend Richard calls her, has much difficulty with this time with herself. She says, I don't know that I have much of a choice to be on this search. I have searched frantically for contentment for so many years in so many ways, and all these acquisitions and accomplishments, they run down in the end. Life, if you keep chasing it so hard, will drive you to death. Time, when pursued like a bandit, will behave like one, always remaining one county or one room ahead of you, changing its name and hair color to elude you, slipping out the back door of the motel just as you're banging through the lobby with your newest search warrant, leaving only a burning cigarette in the ashtray to taunt you. At some point, you have to stop because it won't. You have to admit that you can't catch it, that you're not supposed to catch life. At some point, as Richard keeps telling me, you gotta let go and sit still and allow contentment to come to you. ¶¶ Beaconites know that I don't sit still very much. My personal spiritual discipline is physical activity. I play hockey a couple times a week. I paddle an outrigger canoe with the Fort Langley Canoe Club once a week, most weeks. We paddle around McRae Island and play chicken with the Albion Ferry. Oh, that's fun. They sit still and wait. And I try to run with my dog Lizzie once or twice a week. It's never enough for her, I have to admit. Lizzie would have you know that she gets the short stick all the time. If something has to give, it's the running with her. She will ask you, just how far do you think she ran with me yesterday? I didn't even see her from an early breakfast too long after supper. So Richard's advice to the author to sit still and allow contentment to come to me wouldn't be something I can do easily. Maybe you figured out that finding contentment is another way of saying being comfortable with yourself, the way you are, doing what you're doing. If you can like yourself, then so can others. The author, Elizabeth, continued her pilgrimage going to Indonesia. There she unexpectedly found love. She had filled herself with beauty enough that she could love herself first. And a path toward the commitment that she had sought so desperately opened up. We can't all go on a dramatic pilgrimage like Gilbert writes about so engagingly. Ours might be as prosaic as a canoe trip. I came to call the big canoe trip I went on this past summer a pilgrimage. I actually don't know what else to call this almost 2-month-long trip across Canada from Alberta to Thunder Bay. It was ostensibly to commemorate the explorer David Thompson, but other than for the originator of the idea, most of us were much more interested in the canoe trip for ourselves than some other guy who did it 200 years ago. It was a grind sometimes. We got up at 4:30 or 5 most mornings to paddle 6 to 10 hours a day. Sometimes we could trade off and paddle just half the day. But if we weren't paddling, we were driving the bus to the next town's schoolyard or buying groceries en route or setting up all of our team's tents. Sometimes it was even more fun. Portaging a 26-foot canoe is harder work than the scrubbing of floors that Elizabeth did for a big chunk of time at the ashram. Those big canoes weigh at least 220 pounds. That's the Kevlar ones. The old ones were 450 pounds. Of course, we worked together to do it, and were delighted when our portage wheels were workable. And we were even happier when it was all done. But few of us were only happy when the canoe trip was completed. Yes, it was a satisfaction to arrive at Old Fort William and to know we had accomplished our goal. And I had quite a contingent of Unitarians meet me there from the Lakehead Fellowship. It was good to know that I was going home to my husband and family of 3 critters. But it was also bittersweet to say goodbye to all the friends I'd made in the paddling across Canada. And it was harder yet to know that the paddling was done, that we could never again be on such a trip in such a way. I had to come back to my real life in British Columbia, at Beacon, with my family. And I have returned to the usual schedule of sermons and meetings. But I'm not quite the same. I've had an opportunity to reconsider what is most important for me. I've added paddling to my schedule. Last Tuesday morning when I headed off to the Albion Ferry, the sun was trying to peek through the clouds. No, Mount Baker was not to be seen. But the sun was out, and it was a wonderful day to be on the water. The author, Elizabeth, found a new normal for herself, too, a new way of wholeness in living. She doesn't mention any struggle to maintain her hard-earned new identity and sanity, but I'm going to bet it wasn't easy. What's your experience of restoration? It's like restoring the hardwood floors in an old house, it seems to me. Some of the scratches still show. The spot where the dog peed is still there. The floor is never really new. But the varnish has been renewed, and there is a new resilience for the hard knocks of the everyday life we lead. Amen.